Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. We're going to be talking Lakers basketball for the next hour or so. Two-man show today. I'm Trevor Lane. He's Jovan Buho. In fact, this is the first in a series of two-man shows that we're going to have. The next three episodes, including this one, is going to be a two-man show. So, Jovan, it's you and I holding it down today. Jason getting a little well-deserved time away.
Yeah, man, I'm excited. We did this recently with the Q&A that we went like an extra 45 minutes or so. So excited for today's show.
Yeah, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. Happy to see everybody coming in here from the YouTube channel. If you have not subscribed yet, please make sure you hit the subscribe button over on YouTube. And don't forget to follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts as well. Jovan, I dig the light, the Buho's block. Fluorescent there that you've got in the background. That thing looks pretty slick.
Appreciate it. Shout out to my wife for it was a birthday gift. So I finally got it set up in the new office, and yeah, I'm ready to roll.
It's looking good. All right. We got a lot of stuff to get into here. The Lakers did play the Mavs last night, took care of business. Now the Mavs missing a number of players. The Lakers also missing some players. Luka Doncic was out of action. DeAndre Ayton out of action for the Lakers last night. Jovan, let me get your opinion on this. Should Luka play on Sunday in the All-Star game after missing the Lakers last four games?
Yes, I think so. He was the leading vote getter. He's second right now in jersey sales. I feel like Luka's having a moment. He's been having a moment for the past 12 months. And I think getting traded to the Lakers, it was such a, it transcended just the NBA. It transcended just sports. It really hit the cultural zeitgeist in a way that very few sports things do. So I think capitalizing on that, especially with I think the biggest thing is just like the fan vote. And of course, if he literally cannot play and there's some like real harm, I think he needs to sit out. But assuming that the Lakers were just being cautious with him last night and he could have played if they really needed him to, I think he should play, like, probably on a minutes, or we'll say an All-Star game minutes restriction, where, like, I don't know, 8 minutes, 10 minutes. He's not going to have to, you know, run hard. He's not going to have to play defense. Like, just kind of go through the motions, take a couple step backs. I think that'll be okay.
So I'm on the opposite end. I think that Luka should not play. I want him bubble wrapped. I want him to get the full, if he's going to be missing four games for the Lakers, I want him then to have a full 2 weeks off, which is very rare, to rest and recover midseason and then be ready to go after that. I don't want to take any kind of chances that he could accidentally re-injure the hamstring or something like that in the All-Star game. And then next thing you know, he's missing more games for the Lakers. They've dealt with so many injuries as is. That's certainly a selfish opinion on my part, because from the NBA perspective, it's much, much better if Luka does play in the All-Star game. But my preference is that he does not. I do think, though, you're right in that if he's at 100%, then he'll probably get out there. If he's at 99%, I don't think they will actually risk it. And yes, the Lakers probably were just being cautious with last night's game to have him out there or not. Yeah, this comment says him getting injured in an All-Star game is very unlikely. I'm a warrior. This is what I do. I will be holding my breath every second that he's out there, hoping just don't get hurt in an All-Star game, because that could certainly impact the second half of the Lakers season.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think it just comes down to the risk there and just how they deem it. I assume they're going to be extensively testing it. If he does, you know, if he is trying to return, which I think he is going to try to play, then, you know, that they're going to make sure it's okay. And if not, then it's unfortunate and the league's got to figure out a injury replacement. Maybe Austin gets the call, just because it's going to be hard to, I mean, these guys fly private and stuff, so I'm not going to you know, like, guys can make it to LA if they really want to, but it could be easy just to swap in Austin.
Yeah, that's something that could wind up happening. Look, Adam Silver's had to make a number of All-Star replacements already. Maybe Luka will wind up being another one. All right, let's talk a little bit about last night's game. The Lakers got a 124-104 win against the Mavs. LeBron James drops a triple-double, had 28 points, 10 rebounds, 12 assists. Jokingly got mad at Austin Reeves for stealing the rebound away from him. Let's start with LeBron, though. What did you think? LeBron, now the oldest player to ever put up a triple-double in NBA history.
one of his best games of the season and one of my favorite LeBron games of the season. I thought he really set the tone to start. And, you know, LeBron sometimes starts these games in more of a deferential mode, right? And it also naturally pairs with Luka, who Luka's the one coming out with the big swings and the haymakers. And Luka sets a certain tone often in that like 12 to 16 points in the first quarter. LeBron is more so in facilitator mode, reading the game, reading matchups, reading defensive schemes. And then he starts to progressively become more aggressive throughout the course of a game. That was not the case last night. LeBron came out swinging, which the Lakers needed with no Luka and Austin still coming off the bench. And he scored or assisted on the first 23 points of the game, which is the first time he has done that in his career. That is a career high for starting a game. They're up 16-6. Like he was entirely leading that charge. He had a flare screen for a three, pull up three in transition, deep seal post-ups, attacking the rim in the half court and in transition. So just a really well-rounded performance. But the thing I tweeted out, I don't know if you saw my tweet last night, this blew my mind. It was LeBron's most points in a month. It was his most rebounds in 2 months. And it was his most assists in 3 months. So he does post the first triple-double of the season, but basically right there with like, he's obviously scored. He's had several 30-point games. He had one 15-rebound game, but like definitely his best all-around performance. And he hit certain benchmarks we had not seen from him in a while. Now, he has had four straight games of 10-plus assists, so the assists with Luka out, he has really stepped up with the playmaking. But the rebounding actually surprised me because he only has two games this season with double figure rebounds. And that is something, you know, he's got a lot of games with 8 or 9. So he's like right there. But he is a guy that we are accustomed to seeing easily like 10, 11, 12 plus rebounds. And that just has not been the case as consistently this season. So he really put the team on his back last night for stretches of that game. And yeah, I think it was probably his best game in at least a month, I would say.
Yeah, he was fantastic. And I'll tell you what, beyond just, you know, the numbers and how long it's been since he's put up those many rebounds, that many assists, the points, all of that, it was a phenomenal game. I also thought it was very important that LeBron set the tone in that game, that he came out the way that he did, because the last game before the All-Star break tends to be a game where attentions are elsewhere. Guys are thinking about, hey, the Caribbean island that they're going to spend a better part of a week on, right? The vacations and spending time with family and all of that. It's very easily gets flipped into being this trap game that you're just not entirely focused for. We saw it last year. Last year, the Lakers dropped their game heading into the All-Star break against the Utah Jazz, a game they should not have lost, and they found a way to lose it. You could tell they were not focused. They were looking ahead to vacation. LeBron coming out and setting the tone early was important because whatever LeBron does, right or wrong, whatever LeBron does, the rest of the team's going to follow. If LeBron is fired up and he's engaged on both ends of the floor, the other team will be as well. If LeBron is low energy and LeBron is just kind of mailing it in and getting ready for, you know, the All-Star weekend and all that kind of stuff, the rest of the team will follow him. So him coming out and setting the tone last night, I thought was important, not just for LeBron's individual game, but also for what it meant for the team. It wasn't like this was a 100% pedal to the metal all effort game, but the Lakers put forth enough in order to make sure that they got the win, an important win for them. And I give LeBron a lot of credit for coming out and sort of blazing the trail that everybody else was going to follow.
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple rough stretches there the first half. They had two separate 12-0 runs against them and just let go of the rope in Lakers fashion, right? They just can't
become them though.
they can't help but have these brain farts here and there. But after that first half, and even in the first half, there were some nice stretches from them. But certainly in that third quarter, like the third quarter has been very hit or miss lately, and it was certainly a hit last night. That's when they separated themselves and put themselves in a good position to really put things away early in the fourth quarter. So, I think it was a solid win just because, you know, especially with the context of the Lakers just don't have a lot of blowout wins. They don't have a lot of 20-point wins this season. So I know not the best team and they were shorthanded, no Cooper Flag, but anytime the Lakers register a 20-point win, I think that there is a sense of like they showed up for enough of the game to win it by 20. And I do want to like at least acknowledge that, because I've definitely been on the other side of acknowledging a lot of their less spectacular wins.
Sure. Sure. Let's go here. This comment said, can't wait till our big three players come together along with our 3-point specialist Kennard. Lakers will be scary. Just have to lock them down defensively. And a lot of people saying, why is Marcus Smart taking 9 threes and Luke Kennard's taking 2? What are the Lakers doing? Because defenses stay glued to Luke Kennard. I don't know how well things work in a lineup that features LeBron, Luka, Austin, and Kennard on the floor at the same time. I'm concerned about how many points that quartet would give up just about regardless of who you would make the fifth person in that group. But so far, so good with Luke Kennard's addition to the team. And one of the big subplots for the second half of the season that we'll get into, it's going to be seeing LeBron, Luka, Austin on the floor together, and can they be a net positive? But before we get to that, what have you thought about Luke Kennard so far and the way that he's fit in with this Lakers team?
I think he's been a seamless fit, and there's just so many nuances within his game that I think are just a great fit within LA's offense. Like he's got the gravity, of course, and he's on the scouting report as bona fide laser. Like you cannot leave this guy open, and you see teams like, The 1 to 2 seconds of panic if he somehow gets open or is looking like he's about to shoot, you see teams start to really just freak out about that threat. So that in and of itself has a lot of value. But then he's constantly moving. He's constantly cutting, relocating along the 3-point arc, relocating baseline to baseline or, you know, corner to corner. He'll do slip screens, ghost screens with ball handlers. That was something I talked about when they made the trade. Like, I think they're going to do a lot of guard to guard or inverted pick and rolls with Luke as the screener, because then he can pop out in that threat of, it's similar to like a pick and pop with a stretch big, but now you're just doing it with Luke Kennard, and he often is going to have the smallest guy or potentially the smallest guy on him in a matchup. So you bring that guy into the fray and you see if you can get them switched on to Luka or LeBron or even Austin, depending on how small the player is. So I think there's a lot of different wrinkles within the Lakers offense that they can still unlock with him, to the point about, I mean, we see this with Luke and Rui. The Lakers just don't generate enough looks for their best shooters, and that's something that I think they could do better down the stretch here of the season. But I think he's fit in well. The one thing to your point is I think we have seen progressively, we saw it against the Thunder, we saw it against the Spurs, and I think we even saw it for parts last night. Teams are going to target him. Like, he is the guy that when he's out there, teams are going to try to bring him into the action. I think he's held up okay in some of those matchups. I think he's gotten exposed in some other matchups. And to the point about the big three with him, I would like to probably stagger him and Austin. I think those are the two guys that are the smallest in the rotation and can be targeted in the backcourt. So if you keep those guys a bit staggered, maybe Luke is more with like Luka and some of those bench groups, I think that's probably a better way to, you know, craft the rotation, just because I think you have Luke and Austin, and maybe even then you throw in Rui. Now I think you're teetering a little bit too far in the offensive direction and just not enough defense.
And the challenge that the Lakers have, and we've seen this, and we'll talk about this a bit when we get into, you know, where the Lakers are at the All-Star break. We're kind of saying the same thing that we've been saying for years now, and that's that they've got too many one-way players. And I think one of the reasons why we're not seeing Luke Kennard get open more often is because most of the time when he is on the floor, just out of necessity, because you have to have some defense out there, the opponent's defense has somebody they can cheat off of. And we certainly saw that last night. Again, not a coincidence that it was Marcus Smart who was getting open for those shots and Jared Vanderbilt who's getting open for those shots and not Luke Kennard. So when you have one of those guys on the floor, that gives opponents a default player to cheat off of, and they get to stay at home on Kennard. But I have been really impressed with what he's done. A ball mover. We talked about that when he first came onto the team. He is not somebody who wants to take a million shots. In fact, you could argue he needs to be more aggressive in searching for his shot, but he is very happy to move the ball along, hit the open man. He's attacked closeouts pretty well, getting into the paint, driving and kicking for the Lakers, making the right reads on the offensive end. I think he's a guy that's going to fit in long-term very well. But I think to truly unleash what you've got in Luke Kennard and take advantage of it, ultimately, you're going to need two-way players around him. So as good as he's been in an ideal ultimate Lakers roster build, and we're talking next season and perhaps beyond, I think his impact can be even higher if he's got the right pieces around him, where you have guys that you can't simply leave behind the 3-point line and know that they're not going to shoot a high percentage.
Well, and he hasn't even played with Luka yet, right? Yeah. So, I mean, that's another element here of just the attention that Luka draws in the pick and roll. And even if it's not directly Luka necessarily finding him, the 4-on-3 opportunities, like we haven't seen that as much with the Lakers being able to capitalize on that with Luka out. So I think the offense is good. Like Luka has been the most impactful on-off guy from an offensive perspective. He leads the team in on-court offensive rating. So I think that the Lakers still have multiple levels to go up offensively, in my opinion.
Yeah, agreed. All right. So the other thing I wanted to bring up from last night's game, because there were a lot of great moments for the Lakers. Jackson Hayes throwing down some dunks and dropped the ball out of bounds at one point. That wasn't so great, but I thought Jackson did really well. LeBron was feeding him the ball. He had a nice game. Rui Hachimura, that 15 to 20 foot jumper seems to be really working again. He's knocking that down with regularity, had 21 points. Moving into the future, the one thing that we've now that I've noticed in the last few games, that teams have really been making a concerted effort to get at Austin Reeves below the free throw line. And that's where he struggled the most defensively. Cason Wallace was able to take him into the paint and score on him in a critical juncture of that OKC game. We saw a number of players, whether it was PJ Washington, Brandon Williams just kind of threw himself into Austin Reeves a couple of times and got some free throws. This is going to be a critical, as good as Austin is, last night was maybe a little bit of a subpar game from him, but the bigger concern is, how is he going to hold up when teams are doing that in the playoffs? The numbers suggest where he really struggles defending. It's not so much contesting threes or anything on the perimeter. It's more when teams are able to get him defending in the paint. He doesn't do a great job contesting there. Where are you at on Austin? Because all of this is building towards the playoffs, which are going to be so critical for him and the Lakers in terms of establishing what his value is going to be this summer.
It's something they have to figure out. There's no way around that. I even thought Brandon Williams was able to target him and score on him a couple of times. And that's obviously a smaller, quick guard, right? It's not someone that's necessary. I mean, even Cason Wallace is theoretically, yeah. You know, I mean, I think he's strong for his size and for his frame, but like on paper, Austin should be able to take, absorb a blow from Cason Wallace to the chest and like not let him score on him. So it's an issue. I think in general, like Austin to me does not look to be fully back. The Philly performance was something of an outlier. If you just look at the five games he's played, took him a little bit to get back into a playmaking groove. He had 3 assists his first 2 games. Now has been between 6 and 8 the past 3. But outside of the Philly game, has been in like the mid to high teens, has not broken through to 20 plus points. Now he is on the minutes restriction, but in the Philly game, he was also on the minutes restriction and just exploded for 35. But I think he's someone who could really benefit from this next week of just continuing to rest and recover, get his body right for the stretch run of the season. But I mean, this continues to be the big thing for me. Like I talked about, I know we're going to talk about like goals for the stretch run, but I think the Lakers really have to figure out the best way to fit the big three together, because I think you put those three guys together, there should be a offensive ceiling with that group, but there's also a defensive floor with that group that is pretty low. And I think we've already seen this season with them having like a negative 10 net rating together, small sample size. They've only played in 10 games, but they like have consistently been basically, you know, average-ish to below average with those three, even dating back to last year. They had a +1 net rating in the regular season, dipped to -1 after the playoffs. So like they got to figure that out. And I think, as we've talked about several times on this show, the way to do that is to put the other two spots as like high level defenders, motor players, guys who can cover for some of their defensive limitations, but also get those guys. Cause I think we've seen it with LeBron, with Luka, with Austin, like when they're in some of these lineups where it's Vando and Marcus and Jake or Jackson or whoever, and they're playing hard, that gets everybody to play hard. But when you're starting like low motor players, and it's sort of a chill group, you're not going to see them as engaged. So I think that's the task for JJ here is like, how can I, you're going to have to stagger the big three a lot. I think they'll probably just start games for a few minutes, close games for a few minutes. But even with that, like you got to nail the rest of the lineup.
So let's talk about that then, moving from here, because now here we are at the All-Star break. The Lakers have the exact same record they did last year at the All-Star break, despite missing Austin, LeBron, Luka for far more games. You substitute Luka for AD last season. Most of those three were healthy up until the All-Star break last year. They've been very unhealthy this year, yet have the same record. That in and of itself is fairly impressive. Jovan, that I'm happy with where this team is at, given the injuries that they have incurred. But at the same time, I can't help but land right back where we were when we started the season, right back where we were last season, where big picture, this team is still missing certain skill sets and they're probably short three plus rotation level players. Where are you at on the Lakers? Are you pleased with what you've seen out of them now that we're, you know, past the, we're at the unofficial NBA halfway point of the season? And where do you think this team goes from here for the remainder of this season?
So I did a great Western Forum podcast episode earlier in the week, and we were doing the grades at the All-Star break, and we talked about the JJ grade, and I gave JJ an A- for results and a C+ for process, and that's sort of where I'm at. I think that extrapolates out to how I feel about the team in general. Of from a results perspective, they've been in that like 90 to 93rd percentile. I think they could be even better with some tweaks, and that gets us into the process. But like they've basically been hitting close to their realistic ceiling with who's been available, right? Like it's hard to expect more from this group based on, you look at what LeBron's missed 18 games, Luka's missed 12, and Austin's missed 26, I think. Mm-hmm. That right there, 56 missed games across the big three, that's a huge number. So for them to even still be in this mix based on the limitations of the supporting cast, I think is impressive. That's where, from a results perspective, I think it's an A-. From a process perspective, I think you look at they are far and away behind the rest of the pack. I mean, I have it here, 16th in net rating still, which is eighth in the West. They're behind the Warriors, who have had a season from hell and all this drama and all this. But like the Warriors are still 2 points per 100 possessions better than the Lakers this year. And you look at Denver. Denver's been without three starters for basically the last 3 months, in some form or fashion. And Denver's still plus 4 points per 100 possessions. So it's like the Lakers, I think, have underachieved even within the like results. I would say they've left a lot on the table in terms of, I think, primarily lineup stuff, where JJ took way too long to tweak the starting group, to tweak some of the primary groups. 20, 25 games in the season, most of their top lineups were negatives, despite being 15-4 and having the start they had. So I think it took him a little bit to get his pulse, a little too long, frankly, to get his pulse on best players, best lineups, best rotation. I think he's settled in nicely the last 15 games. But to me, I mean, we're still in the same spot where I think this team is good. I don't think they're great, but we also don't fully know the full picture because we haven't seen the big three. My three goals for the Lakers over the final 28 games: get healthy, figure out the best lineups and rotation around the big three, find a way to maximize those three together, and then have some statement wins down the stretch. I want to see them beat Denver with Jokic. I want to see them beat OKC with Shea. I want to see them beat Houston. I want to see them beat Boston. I want to see them beat, you know, they play New York, they play Detroit. You don't have to win all those games. You don't even have to go 500, but beat some of those teams at full strength, get healthy, get the big three right, and I think you go into the playoffs with a shot to at least win a round, if not potentially two, on the high side.
Yeah, love those goals. Those are fantastic goals for the remainder of the season for this Lakers team. You know, we talk about overachieving right now on cleaning the glass. They've got, and you know, we can quibble over how the metric is created and all that, but they have the Lakers plus 6.3 over their expected wins, which is number one.
Which is
in the
NBA.
Huge
number. Huge, that's a huge number.
Right? But
I think that's historic number, if I'm not. Right. I think the like plus three or plus four is like the highest.
Right. To be plus 6.3 is pretty insane. They are, the Lakers, according to Cleaning the Glass, are expected to be a 40.6 win team. So the Lakers are on pace to potentially win 50 games again. But then you look at last year's numbers and they were five games over expected on the plus side. So perhaps there's just something about the Lakers that it's not registering properly or something like that. But still, the bottom line is I think they have overachieved to some degree in terms of their wins and losses, especially in the context of how many injuries that they've dealt with. But ultimately, they've got to figure out from here on out. I do think, Jovan, that essentially the move they made, which was a fine move in a vacuum to get Luke Kennard, it also sends the message that, hey, we're not going to win this year, right? We're not, the deficiencies that we have are likely going to be prohibitive of us actually making a real run this season. And so because of that, that doesn't mean the season is just lost and wasted and all of that. There is an element of regret to it, of course, to have a team with Austin Reeves at $14 million, LeBron James and Luka Doncic, and say, oh, we don't have a shot to contend. That's a tough spot to be in. It should not be acceptable that that's where they're at, but it is where they're at. So from here, it's about figuring out what are the pieces that are going to stick around with this team? Who's going to be on this team next year? Who do we think can be part of a team that's built properly around Luka Doncic through that lens? That is a big part of the analysis from here on out. Yes, it's about getting this team to play their best basketball. Yes, it's about figuring out, can Austin and Luka be a good pairing? Can Austin, LeBron, and Luka be a good trio, trying to give themselves at least a puncher's chance come playoff time if those three are at their best? But a big piece of things, the big picture puzzle for the Lakers, it's who is it on this team that you want to keep to be part of a team that really does fit around Luka Doncic? Everything is going to be set up for what's going to be a massive summer. I'm not super comfortable with it, Jovan. I feel like they're putting too many eggs in the basket of one summer to try to get good, but that's where they're at right now. So my hope is that we get clarity on which players are keepers for this summer and which are not. And I think we will have a better sense of that by the end of the season. They're going to run the gauntlet against a lot of good teams. Like you said, hopefully they're able to get pick up some big statement wins. And then hopefully they advance here in the playoffs. If things fall apart come playoff time again, we're talking massive changes coming to this team this summer.
I will flip this to you then. Who do you think right now projects to be a fit around Luka and most likely Austin?
It's the balancing act, isn't it? Right? Like Jackson Hayes is an easy yes. He fits around mm-hmm. those two, but it's the balancing act of, can you keep both Rui and say Luke Kennard? And if you have both of those guys plus Austin and Luka, what level of defender does literally every other player on your roster have to be? I think DeAndre Ayton's a clear no in terms of a long-term. Maybe he picks up that option, but and that would be fine. I don't think he'd be terrible value on that contract, but DeAndre Ayton is a clear no. I think Adu Thiro is a keeper. You hang on to him because if he hits, he's exactly the type of player that you're looking for. Jared Vanderbilt, I think you can, even though he is the defensive piece that you need, you can move on from him simply because the offensive end of the floor. Marcus Smart, he'd be a keeper for me. From there, Jake LaRavia, you hang on to.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably about it, right? I mean, Luka, Rui, Austin, Vando's kind of borderline for me. Kennard, LaRavia, Smart. That's the, and of course,
did you say Jackson?
Girl. Yeah, and Jackson was the one at the okay, beginning yeah. of that. So that's probably my group.
Well, that's a lot of that's a lot of players. I'm pretty much with you. I think the only guy like, yeah, I mean, I think Maxi and Dalton move on from. Yep. I think DA. And then LeBron, I think that's going to come down to a lot of factors of, I mean, is he even playing next season? Does he want to be in LA? Do they want him in LA? How much does he want? How much do they want to pay him? A lot of uncertainty there. But what I would say, though, and this is where I'm really interested, I'll say, to see how the summer plays out. I think pretty much every role player on this team within reason or the primary supporting cast, I think they could all fit on the theoretical future version of a Luka Austin led team. I just think they're all bench players. So that's where, we could even get into like DA. I think DA is sure. a good backup center. I think, Jackson's a good backup center. I think Marcus, Jake, and Rui are all really good bench players. So on and so forth. So you just have to restructure the hierarchy of the salary, the cap sheet to have those guys be reflected as bench players. And if any of those guys are starting, I just don't think you're quite good enough. Because a point I've been making recently with the whole fifth starter debate is like, none of those guys would start on any of the other top five teams in the West. And I mean, literally go through each starting group and show where, I mean, the one exception was maybe San Antonio, but I actually think Champagne would start over Rui just because he's a better defender.
The defense, yeah.
And yeah, so, and I think he actually, like, you know, he plays more to his size. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think any of those guys would start on any of the other teams. And I just think at this point, the Lakers are sort of in a situation where they're probably starting two players who, like, should not be starting for a team that wants to try to compete for a title. And you got to restructure that this summer. So I'm fine with keeping a lot of these guys in a bench role, but you have to be adding the, I think, probably three front court starters to replace and sort of restructure the entire group.
And I don't think of all the players that I listed there, I don't think they actually keep all of those players. Those are players who should be in consideration to be held on to. And I think it's a good point that in an ideal world, they're coming off the bench for you rather than starting, both with fit concerns as well as talent level concerns with those types of players. So we'll see if the Lakers can actually accomplish that, because that's we're talking about three starters that we can look at it and say, well, the Lakers are going to have more cap space than anybody else this summer. And that may be factually correct. But the players you're talking about, if they were getting true starting caliber players, my concern, Jovan, is that 50-ish, 57 million, 48 million, you know, whatever it actually lands on, a mountain of cap space and three first-round picks may not be enough, probably isn't enough, to get the kinds of players that we're talking about here.
No, and that's what I've been saying on the show for you know, the past week since the trade deadline, is that I'm fairly confident. I think the Lakers are going to land an impact player in free agency or in the summer, whether it's via free agency or via the trade market. Some team needs to get off some money. The Lakers can take on a contract and potentially not even give up an asset depending on the situation. But okay, you got your one guy. You still need more guys. And especially if you're losing LeBron, then, you know, let's just say they land Peyton Watson, Denver cheaps out, they can't get off the Cam Johnson contract, they don't want to give up Christian Brown. Okay, if you know, we'll pay Peyton Watson up to 25 million. If you go up above 25 million, we're not going to match it. Lakers go up above 27 million, yeah. or 30, sure. If you're at, like, let's just say on average 50-ish million for the cap scenarios here, that's already 60% of your cap is gone, and now you have 20 million to play with to, in my opinion, probably add two starting level players, or maybe you add like a starting level center and then you re-sign Rui with his bird rights and Rui is your starting four. But then also look at who's out there in free agency and show me the guy that is worth that 20-ish million or you know, 15 to 20 million. I don't think you're getting Mitchell Robinson for that. And even then, I think he's more of a high level backup than a starter and like someone who New York has had to protect from a workload perspective. So I just think you're in a tough position where I think LA is going to get a name, and I think they'll be able to sell that. And they will sell that to the fan base of, hey, we got player X, we got player Y, whatever. It's, can you build out the actual starting group and rotation? That's where I'm more skeptical.
Yeah. It's a mountain of work. It's why I wanted to see more stuff done at the trade deadline, because now you've put a lot. You know, but I'm of the mindset that, number one, there's frustration on my part that you've got a team with LeBron, Luka, Austin only making $14 million, and you're at a spot where you have to say our deficiencies are going to prevent them from being in that contender tier. And you weren't able to fix that. You weren't able to fix that this season. That should not be an acceptable outcome when you've got that kind of top-end talent on your team. But this is the spot that they're in, and we could spend an hour going into all the past decisions that have ultimately led them to this point. Now, though, this summer, I really don't think that it is acceptable to come out of this summer with a team that is not ready to roll. And I think part of that is they're going to start feeling the pressure of Luka's pending free agency coming up in a couple of years. If they come out of another summer saying, well, maybe we can fix X, Y, and Z at the trade deadline, they've got a lot of work to do this summer to land those kind of pieces that you're talking about. And like you said, if we're talking about restricted free agents, those are the best names out there on the market. You're going to have to get that incumbent team not to match. think the Jazz probably match just about anything on Walker Kessler. Peyton Watson's going to be difficult to get. These may be the best players available, but actually acquiring them, well, Rob Pelinka is going to have to really show his value this summer and find some way to magic wand this into a roster that has the types of players that the Lakers need, the types of players that every team is going after right now. Athletic defenders who can switch across multiple positions and shoot the ball. Very, very difficult to find those players, but that will be the task of this Lakers team this summer. That's why part of what they're doing right now and what they're going to do from here on out, it's not only about playing their best basketball come playoff time, giving themselves a shot, make your playoff run as long as you possibly can, of course, but it's also about figuring out who is it that they can hang on to. Is Rui a guy that you bring back? How much money does Rui want on his next contract? What's the price to move off of Jared Vanderbilt? Do you keep Vando and say that maybe the shooting will continue to improve? All of those decisions are going to have to be made, and they're going to have to get them right if the Lakers are going to thread this needle and become the team that ultimately they need to be. So there's a mixed bag of moves from Rob Pelinka over the years. This is do or die time this summer. This is going to be definitively, can Rob build this team out or not? I think we're going to have an answer to that by, let's say, September.
Yeah, and again, I'm trying to set what I think is going to happen here, and again, could be wrong.
You're not optimistic about what's
going to happen. Could play out several. Well, because I think they're going to get a name. I think they're going to find like the shiny player that they can prop up as like, hey, we did something this summer. But I think it needs to be beyond that of like, okay, you got Peyton Watson, but did you also get the center?
Yeah.
And did you add some two-way depth to this roster? You got Walker Kessler. Okay, did you get the wing? You got Giannis. Okay, how'd you build out the rest of the group, right? Like that's my thing, is I think at times that they've kind of done like the one move and sort of championed that move as like the big addition of the summer or the big thing that they did, when I think a lot of summers it's needed to be multiple moves and bigger changes, and they just have not followed through on that. So that's where I'm at. Of again, like if they could pull off Walker Kessler, Peyton Watson, Tari Eason, awesome, right? If you could steal Lu Dort or Isaiah Hartenstein from OKC, great. But I think they need more than that. And if it's just like swapping in that player and losing LeBron, I think you're sort of treading water and could even be worse, quite frankly. So I think that they got to figure that out.
Do you think they lose LeBron? Where are you at on LeBron's future? Does it lie with the Lakers? Retirement? Is he somewhere else? What do you think?
It's tough to say. I think there are clearly three options, right? And by nature of two of those options are not him being on the Lakers and either him retiring or being elsewhere. I think it is more likely than not that he is either retired or elsewhere. But you also look at the market and you're like, unless he's taking a minimum contract or a giant pay cut, where else is he getting that money from? Unless it's like a rebuilding situation, which LeBron is not going to want to be on a rebuilding team. So if he wants to be in certain markets and make a certain amount of money, I think that's going to be tough to pull off. So I think he's going to have to pick between potentially the money, which LA could maybe realistically offer the most, even if it is still a giant discount compared to what he's making, or like, you know, fresh start, final chapter of his career, maybe a better team on paper that he can contend more with. That's something that he's going to have to weigh. I don't have the answer to that. I don't have the insight into, again, I don't even know if he's made up his mind on what he's doing in terms of retiring or continuing to play. I mean, he just talked about he feels like he could play forever last night, and that, you know, it's just a matter of how long does he want to keep putting in the mental work and preparation. So I wouldn't be surprised if he plays one more year, but I do think between staying a Laker and potentially leaving, I'm leaning more on the leaving side. And also the part that we were talking about it from LeBron's perspective, there's also the Lakers perspective, where the Lakers have telegraphed a lot of they're ready to move on. Quite frankly, I think if they weren't ready to move on, they would have been investing more in this team and trying to send LeBron out on a high note. They've been telegraphing like, we're more focused about the next team that does not feature LeBron and features Luka and Austin, and like building around that.
Yeah, that was where I wanted to go next. This is a uncharted territory for LeBron this season. And I'm curious to see how this plays out the rest of the way, because again, this could be his final. LeBron may not have made up his mind yet on whether or not this is going to be his final season, but this could be it. And the Lakers at the trade deadline either were unwilling or incapable of landing pieces that would help him actually get a real shot to go win the whole damn thing again. This is also uncharted territory in that he is not the most important player on his team for the first time in probably his entire life, right? So this is a weird season for LeBron, and I have to wonder, as all smiles as he was last night, how does he really feel about the Lakers and the way this is all played out, knowing that this could be it for him, and they're so focused on a post-LeBron future with Luka. He understands, and he's talked about it, like, yeah, the Lakers are building around Luka. He gets it. It's the smart thing to do here. But I do wonder if this is kind of the breaking point for LeBron with the Lakers, and if he just decides to finish off his career somewhere else. Again, money-wise, the Lakers can offer him more than most other teams can or will. And so it's very possible he winds up, his family's in LA. I don't think there's necessarily animosity there. I don't sense that. But it does seem to be a bit of a strange situation in that LeBron knows that the team is moving on without him, and then, again, didn't really provide him with the stuff that he needed to potentially go win. Feels to me more and more like LeBron and the Lakers parting ways is going to happen sooner rather than later. And by sooner, I mean this summer rather than after another year.
Well, and I saw in the chat, like, someone, I think it was BC, who said that I'm trying to push LeBron out the door. That is not what I'm trying to do by any means. If the Lakers are open to keeping LeBron and LeBron is open to taking a pay cut, I'm open to that as well. Like, I think it would be awesome if LeBron finished his career as a Laker, which could even be retiring after this season and going out as a Laker. So if the franchise wants that and LeBron wants that and they're on the same page, I'm not going to criticize that or push back against that. The one thing I will note, and I've been trying to note recently with the whole LeBron conversation, is at some point here in the near future, whether it's next season, the season after, or maybe LeBron continues to defy father time, plays like two more years, at some point in the next 2 to 3 years, and again, maybe sooner, the Lakers will have a version of this team that does not feature LeBron. And I think there is something to, do you want to keep pushing that version out into the future? Because I think even with whatever that version looks like, you're going to need some time and reps, right? So for example, let's just say LeBron plays one more year as a Laker, goes out as a Laker, then like you're eventually going to need to build the 2027-28 version of this team that does not feature LeBron. And that group is going to need to go through its growing pains, getting its reps, its continuity. So now you're kind of kicking it down the road again to almost 2028-29, when maybe that group loses in round one or two, then like the next year is when they make conference finals, whatever. But like, you typically need a progression. Very few rosters are put together overnight and immediately have success. You look at OKC and Boston and Denver, the last three champions. They all had multi-year runs before they finally won a championship. That's what I think the Lakers need. So the one argument, at least on my side, from like the whole LeBron discussion, is that LeBron is probably, he's probably going to not play beyond another year or two. So you will eventually have this reality at some point soon with a LeBron-less roster. And you might need to get there sooner than later, because the longer you wait on that, the more it's just pushing that future and just how long it's going to take to, I think, really build a championship roster out, right? So that's my one sort of follow-up on that.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point to make. And, you know, look, by no means are we trying to push LeBron James out there, nor do we have the power to do so. What we're talking about,
if we were in charge of some moves here, the starting lineup would look different. the trade deadline would have gone differently. So, look, we have like maybe a sliver of power, but not enough to dictate roster moves.
No, definitely not. But I've said it many times. I hope whenever LeBron's final game is, I hope he plays it in a Lakers uniform, whether that's this year, next year, whatever. I want his career to come to a close in purple and gold. He's meant a lot to this franchise for a long, long time. But you're right, at some point, you're gonna have to rip the Band-Aid off. You're gonna have to move into that new era, and it may take time to transition. And so getting that done sooner rather than later may make sense. Again, he may just get to the end of the season and say, that's it, I'm good, and ride off into the sunset. We don't know for sure what's going to happen with LeBron. All right, we do need to get into our chat questions and comments. We'll finish off the show with that, so keep putting them in the chat section. First, going to give a quick shout out to our sponsor. We'll be right back in 1 minute. All right, quick shout out to today's sponsor, OG. If you're locked into everything happening with the purple and gold, breaking down matchups, late game decisions, and debating how far this squad can really go, OG is built for you. OG is a prediction markets experience where instead of traditional sports betting, you trade real world outcomes. On OG, you're trading simple yes or no outcome contracts. For example, you can trade outcomes like, will the Lakers win tonight? Prices move in real time based on market demand, which basically reflects how confident the market is in that outcome. And right now, OG is offering a welcome bonus for new users. When you sign up, you'll receive a 100% profit boost capped at $20 for 5 straight days. Each boost lasts 24 hours and can be applied to one trade. And if your trade finishes in the money, your profit gets doubled up to $20. That's up to $100 in total profit boosts, no matter which event you trade. Terms and conditions apply. OG prediction markets are derivatives products offered by Crypto.com, Derivatives North America, a commodity futures trading commission regulated exchange. OG isn't just sports either. You can trade markets across politics, economics, and more. Check leaderboards and jump into the live chat with other users. If you want to check it out, head to OG.com or scan the QR code on the screen. Terms and conditions apply. All right, and a big thank you to OG for sponsoring the show. Let's get into some of your chat questions and comments. MJ said, will Pelinka fail horribly this summer? God, I hope not. Part of me hopes he does, so the new front office has no choice but to either relegate him to another role or fire him. Jovan, Dan's piece from the other day made it sound more like they're going to be adding to this front office rather than removing or replacing Rob Pelinka. Is this seat going to get hot if this summer doesn't go well?
Maybe. I think it would have to be an outright disaster. And I do think there's a pathway to a disastrous summer. If you don't land Giannis, if you don't land any of the restricted free agents, and if some of the players you maybe think are going to shake loose on the trade market just because teams have to make some financial decisions, maybe those guys don't shake loose, or maybe those teams, like, if I'm OKC, I'm exhausting every option to not trade Lu Dort or Isaiah Hartenstein to the Lakers, because I'm looking at, they have Luka, who's about to be 27. They have Austin, who's 27. Like, they're a little bit ahead of the OKC timeline, at least like the Chet J-Dub part of it. But the Lakers are going to be a threat against OKC for the next half decade plus. So I would not be trying to position that team, especially knowing that they need a center upgrade, they need a wing upgrade. I would not be trying to hand them an upgrade here, or I'm at least demanding like a first or something, even more. Maybe I want two. You want Lu Dort? Give me two firsts, right? And then it's on the Lakers to haggle that and get that price down. But I think there is a pathway, however narrow, to a potential failure. But again, I continue to reiterate, nothing I've heard indicates that anything is going to change this summer. Rob just talked about it at the trade deadline media availability that he's going to be leading the charge this summer with Genie in terms of building out the front office. And one would assume that with them revamping the front office and basketball ops, you're not just going to like make these big hires, big decisions going into the summer, and then 2 months later be like, well, this was a disaster, we need to get out of it. It's usually there's some time there. So I would assume he's at least in charge into like the 2027 offseason on like the shortest possible timeline. But it really depends how things play out. But I that's why I think they'll get the one name that will be able to like save some face. But can they build out the rosters is TBD.
And I think that's where they've really, when we look at the back end of the roster, that's been the biggest problem for the Lakers over the last few years.
Dumpster fire.
Exactly. They're routinely, the Lakers' other guys are not as good as the other guys on opposing teams. And we're seeing that happen on a consistent basis. They're not finding the diamonds in the rough. They're not finding guys that are contributors. And that's, you know, missing on draft picks. That obviously has hurt. Today's NBA, it's all about having depth. And you've got to be able to hit on some of these guys. You got to be able to find some guys that can become rotation level players for you. That's where I think a lot of the value from general managers is coming in. The Lakers, they've made some of the big moves. They've done well on some of the big moves. They've had a really big miss too, the Russell Westbrook situation, but where they've fallen short, and this is where I hope the front office, by beefing up the front office, will get better at this in the scouting department. You need to find players that can step in and play meaningful minutes for you deeper into your bench. And so we'll see if that will improve this summer. The one guy that you're talking about, the headline name that the Lakers will probably land, that may indeed do enough to pacify fans who are upset with Rob Pelinka right now. But for me, the true test is going to be, can he build out the back end of this roster, not just the starting lineup, because that is becoming a more and more critical, especially the way this team gets hurt. You have to have depth on the team. So that's going to be a big task for him this summer. And if we go into next season and it's not going well, I think the big and maybe even more important factor in all of that is, what does Luka think? Because we're not far away from Luka having some power over this club when we're talking about his next contract and what that's looking like. So that's going to create some urgency here as well. What does Luka think about the roster that's being built? What's his opinion of how things are going? The NBA is a star-driven league, and the way Luka sees things is going to matter.
I have a fun question for you.
Yeah.
Who do you think is a Laker the longest? Luka, JJ, or Rob?
History tells you it's the player. The disaster scenario would be Luka wants to go back to Dallas or something in 2020. And I know Mavs fans are talking all about that. I will go with Luka, though, because I think the superstar player is the one that tends to have the most longevity with the club, as long as the player wants to be there. And Luka is an international superstar. Head coaches, I know the Lakers are committed to JJ long term, but head coaches just have a shorter lifespan with a given team. So I'll say Luka is with the Lakers longest.
I agree. I think it's between Luka and JJ.
Yeah. Yep. All right. The chat says JJ. I can see, I mean, you never know, but it's easy. Here's the thing. It's easier to change out a general manager. It's easier to change out a head coach than it is to move on from a true superstar level player. And that's something that we've seen play out across a number of teams throughout NBA history. It's easier to make those other changes rather than replace a true superstar in this league. And so that's what we'll come down to.
I also think, like, if you go Vogel into Ham into Redick into, like, now coach number four in mm-hmm. such a short period of time, depending on, you know, in this hypothetical, when this would happen, it's just at some point it's got, like, you can only change over the coach so much before you have to think about bigger changes, I think.
Let's go here. Do you guys think the Lakers can get Adu to play some rotation minutes in the playoffs against the super physical matchups? I don't think he's ready. I've had a lot of people that have been saying, you know, JJ needs to play Adu Thiron more. He's a second round pick. He didn't get a preseason, didn't get a training camp. He got hurt midseason. I just think it's wishful thinking to, and I hope I'm wrong, by the way. I hope he bursts onto the scene and he's so great that he winds up being somebody that can be a playoff contributor. I just don't think it's realistic at this stage to even have that thought in your head that he's going to be a guy they're going to depend upon, not only in the regular season, but in the postseason.
Well said. I agree with everything you said. I don't think he's ready. I also think JJ has telegraphed this time and time again. He has said multiple times this is a development season for Adu when asked about Adu's role and progress and what the Lakers are looking for from him. He has talked about him as a developmental prospect. He has not talked about him as a guy who's ready to contribute. And then you add in the context of he's basically been on and off injured and rehabbing and recovering for the past year and missed summer league, missed training camp, missed the preseason, missed the start of the season, then also had a setback in season and had to miss. I mean, he's had a couple setbacks in season, has had to miss time. I don't like forget even his skill set or just like he's not gotten the reps. I don't know if he's physically ready to withstand like a rotation role full time moving forward. So I think it also JJ is just not, I mean, we can also just look at the results of JJ's not played him. And he's only played him when they've been like super decimated. And even then he's been more in that like 8 to 12 minute role. He's not had like 20 minute games or starting or whatever. So I think JJ has telegraphed at every turn. He does not view him as a rotation caliber player right now. He views him as a developmental piece. He has not played him, and he's also dealt with injuries. So all those things together, I think he's, you know, number 14 or 15, maybe 14 on the hierarchy right now on the roster.
And that's, is that ideal? I mean, you'd love to get the guy that just bursts onto the scene and is awesome right away. But I think about Max Christie, and I think about how many years it took him to develop. It took him a few seasons to really get going in the end, and that's even with a clear fit on just about any roster in the league because of his skill set. It took Max Christie time to get there. Now, Max came into the NBA a little bit younger than Adu. Adu is still a very young player, but it's a process, and it's going to take some time. So I think part of it, you know, it almost goes back to the Trevor Ariza of it all. Can't judge this team till Trevor Ariza returns or whatever. The Lakers are so desperate for a Adu Thiro's skill set that I see a lot of people that are, you know, why are they not playing this guy? This guy can help. He's not ready for the NBA level yet. If he hits, and we've said this before, if he hits, that is more impactful for the Lakers than Dalton Knecht hitting or Kobe Bufkin or Nick Smith Jr. or Bronny or any of the other young adjacent players on the roster, because his skill set is one that the Lakers so badly need. It's just going to take time for him to get there. My hope is that he gets a full summer league in this year. He gets a full training camp, preseason, all of that. And then maybe it's next year that we start to see him really become, I'm not suggesting a starter or anything, but perhaps part of the rotation or rotation adjacent anyway. But it's going to take time for him.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, he was a second round pick. Like, I know people are putting certain projections on him, and they could certainly use his skill set in theory. I just think, even when he's played, he's had some nice flashes, and I like his motor. I like his athleticism. I like his defense, but he's still pretty raw. I think particularly on the offensive end and just the quickness with the decision-making and stuff, like that stuff takes time. Now, it would have been great if he was not injured, if he played in summer league, yeah, if he played in training camp in the preseason. I think there's an alternate reality here where he's not dealing with this knee situation, or maybe it's cleaned up by the summer. He has a lot more time on the court, both with South Bay and the parent team and practicing and all this stuff. And he's ahead of schedule. But I think in part due to the injury, and also due to a lesser extent how the Lakers manage their young players, he's just not ready to, like, you look at how like a guy like Carter Bryant, right? Yeah. And how I know he, you know, higher pedigree going into the season and like higher expectations, but San Antonio has been grooming him to take on a bigger role, and now they're starting to scale up the role. But it's been a process, and there's been progress there. With Adu, it's just not really been possible because of just the injuries, quite frankly. And then to a lesser degree, again, LA is pretty conservative with their young players.
He's not the Thiro the Lakers need. Not just yet, anyway.
Oh, man.
I had to get in some kind of pun in the show. All right. Don't know if it was already asked, but have either of you seen Jimmy High Roller's video about Luka's defense? If so, what are your thoughts? I have not seen it. I saw a little bit, just a glimpse of the conversation that was going on social media, but I didn't actually have a chance to go and watch the video. Have you seen it?
I saw parts of it. I saw the beginning. I know the gist of it. I mean, I agree with the premise. I will note that when you want to make an argument, you can find statistical evidence to support it. So I know some of the defensive numbers he referenced, you know, painted Luka more as like an average to maybe slightly below average defender. There are also some metrics like, you know, the blow by percentage continues to recirculate. And sure. I think Luka's third or fourth there. And there are some other metrics, like I think on B-ball index, he has a F in D LeBron. LeBron and Austin both have Fs. And that's the challenge with the big three together, is just some of the defense limitations. So I think you can find defensive metrics that support him being a bad defender. You can find defensive metrics that support him being an average defender. I think his defense is underrated and is overblown, but certainly I think there are limitations at times, the effort and focus can wane on that. He's also carrying such an offensive load that, like, I'm more okay with that than I am certain other players in the rotation. And I've talked about this before, but I do think Stars should get some leeway on the defensive side. Doesn't mean you don't try, doesn't mean you don't play defense, but like, you are carrying, it's tough for someone to carry a 39% usage percentage and then also be like an all defense caliber defender. So it's natural that you save your energy for certain pockets of the game. But yeah, I think in general, he is underrated defensively. Is he an all defense guy? Like, no. Is he, I think he's a really good off ball defender and defensive playmaker. I think on the ball, particularly on the perimeter, that's where you see more the foot speed and lateral quickness limitations, the closeouts or like ISO defense. I think those are his two weaknesses, but yeah, I mean, I LA's tried to protect him and I think they've done like a decent job. I think the issue is they have so many guys to protect that it just kind of compounds into being a bad defense.
Is the central theme that he's a better defender than he gets credit for?
Yes, yes.
That's what. Okay, so I agree with that. I think part of it, and the same applies to Austin Reeves, when he does look bad defensively, he looks bad defensively in very loud ways. It's easier to get away with being bad defensively off ball because naturally for the vast majority of fans, your eye is trained to that bouncing ball and you're following it and paying attention to that. And you may not notice what's happening on the weak side. You may not notice a guy missing the rotation or misplaying things, losing sight of their man, whatever it is that happens off ball. When Luka gets beat, he gets blown by on the perimeter, right? And that's a immediate, he's in that spotlight. When Austin gets beat, he gets taken into the paint and gets scored on. He's in that spotlight. So that is part of what I think creates a over-exaggeration of what Luka actually is and isn't as a defensive player. And it's because of how loud his shortcomings are on that end. I think he can be an okay defensive player. He's still going to get switch hunted. He's still going to get attacked. Quicker guards are going to try to drive by him, but he does do some things well. He has very quick hands, anticipates very well out there. His rebounding is excellent, but the areas
that's of the big one. I'm glad you highlighted, like, he's probably the best rebounder on the team. I mean, it might be, I guess, Vando on like a per possession per minute basis, but in like, especially with the starters and just the, I think Vando's a little bit further back in the rotation, that top seven, top eight, like he's the best rebounder.
Yeah, absolutely. And so he's got real things that he brings, but if he were say a guy who gets a little spacey off ball, but routinely shuts down guys who try to take him one-on-one, the impact of his defense could be the same, but the overall perception of his defense would be much more positive. And so I think it's
actually Vando is actually a great version of this, where I think Vando on the ball and even like directly off the ball, maybe like a pass away is great. Vando gets beat back door and back cutted so much, just continually. And I think Vando's off ball defense is much closer to like an average defender than an elite defender when it's more so like tracking guys around or like, corner shooter or something like that. But because Vando, you see him on the ball or you see him like the one pass away in the zone and he's, tipping passes or creating havoc, like that stands out in your brain more. But when you actually lock in on him off the ball, you're like, this kind of problematic. Like, some of the other guys that are lesser on ball defenders are actually better off of the ball than he is. So, I think we're trained to watch the ball and that's a thing you have to break by either focusing on that in the moment or going back and watching the film and actually like looking at who was supposed to be where and whatnot.
Yeah. So much is revealed when you go watch something a second time and can really dig into that and can pause and all of that. All right. We got a few more. Let's do this one. Between Luka and Giannis, who's easier to build a championship roster around? Seems tough to get pieces for Luka. Thanks for very thoughtful coverage. That's an interesting one. If you were to start a team right now, well, I guess a little bit of a different question. Who's easier to build a club around? Is it Giannis or is it Luka?
I think it's Luka. I think it's Luka just because, I mean, you basically have an offense unto himself with Luka, right? And you just need athletic bigs who can finish lobs, and then two-way wings around him, and you know, ideally one high-level secondary ball handler. With Giannis, I think you need a stretch big, which all automatically kind of shifts the way that, I mean, if we're going through like, okay, I mean, Brook Lopez was a great fit until he started to fade from an age perspective. But then you're like, okay, Miles Turner, there's a reason why they spent what they spent to go get him. But then you get to like Porzingis, you can't really trust him with health. Vucevic is bad defensively. There's not a lot of like stretch bigs that are like starting level stretch bigs who can fit next to Giannis. So I think the Giannis build is a more narrow build, where even like Jackson Hayes was a starting level center next to Luka on a 51 team, because I think you just need like a more readily available skill set. Now, if you want to make the case for Giannis, I think the case would just be that he's a better, I would say a much better defender than Luka. And so like you're already starting from a kind of more balanced two-way perspective, where with Luka, you do need to make sure you have a certain amount of defense around him. But I also think Giannis he's been injury prone the last few years. He's not really had a relevant playoff moment since 2022. He's Luka's 5 years younger. Like I'd rather build around Luka and have Luka. So I think the only argument would be like the defensive side for Giannis and like having already a certain floor there. But Giannis needs a lot of shooting, a lot of two-way play. You need a point guard with Giannis ideally. So I just think with Luka, it's a little bit more simple of like, you need two player archetypes. With Giannis, I think you probably need three. And again, there's like, I have less certainty in Giannis maintaining his health.
I think it's interesting because I agree with you. I think I would go Luka, but what Luka needs outside of the big, I think, is more difficult to acquire than what non-bigs Giannis needs. Giannis, you've got more leeway to have a player out there that isn't a great defensive player on the perimeter. Luka, like everybody on the floor with him, has to be a really good defensive player. That said, finding a rim running lob threat big is probably easier to find than a true stretch big that can also protect the paint. Those guys are few and far between. So it is that kind of weird dynamic where finding the wings that you need to put alongside Luka is a very difficult challenge. You have more leeway with the wings on a Giannis team, but you have to find that specific big that I think is more difficult to find than the Luka big. Ultimately, again, I go Luka between those two, but it is an interesting dynamic because Giannis does give you that defensive floor that lets you add some, or at least be open to adding some other pieces. Whereas I think the Lakers this summer, they almost have to be so laser focused on guys who can defend and shoot that anybody that can't do that, they almost have to be an automatic no, even if it's a great value, if the player doesn't give you that defensive floor that you need. Whereas on the Giannis side, you've got, I think, more leeway to capitalize on value, at least with your perimeter players.
Yeah, and I also think like there's a, despite the numbers being relatively similar, I think there is a notable gap between the two offensively as well, where, I mean, Luka's just in a different stratosphere as a playmaker and passer than Giannis, and also as a shooter, right? Like Luka's shot has regressed to the mean, and he's closer now to being a league average 3-point shooter on a very high volume and high difficulty, you know, of 3-point attempts. So I think there's a lot more flexibility offensively. Now, I think Luka could do a better job of adapting maybe to some of that flexibility, right? And not having it be as much heliocentric ball, high pick and roll stuff. But I think just from a foundational perspective, I would lean Luka. But I mean, I think it's close. I think it's, you are splitting hairs. You can make the case either direction. I just, with Giannis being 5 years older, having the injury history that he has recently, and I mean, I think similarly, like you need the two-way guys around Giannis too, right? Like I think for both, it's like you have the two different centers, you have two-way wings. And then for Giannis, you want more of like a point guard. For Luka, you want more of like the secondary scoring guard, right? So that's where it differs in like the starting constructions ideally. But I don't know. I mean, Giannis, like they just have not been as good the last few years. And again, have not really done much in the playoffs. And I just think Luka has done more over the last few years.
Yeah. Is it a mistake the Lakers target Giannis this summer?
Depends on the alternatives, but I would say in general, no. I think I do think we have a extensive track record with like players of a certain caliber together typically results in championship. I think just even looking at this millennium, Kobe and Shaq, the peak of the three-peat, and even that first year Kobe was still ascending, right? And I think like he had the big game four against Indiana, and I think that was his arrival as like top five, top three guy. But especially the last couple titles, I mean, you could argue they had two of the three best players in the league, two of the four best players in the league. Then you think about LeBron and Wade together the first title year. Wade had maybe slipped a little bit, but he was still arguably top five guy. You go to Steph and KD. I think they were two of the three best players in the league next to LeBron. Then, you know, so you just look at, I think you even go to the last Lakers title team. I think LeBron and AD were both top five guys, if not top three or four guys. So I think it's just, if you have like two top five guys, it is different than even two top 10 guys. I think oftentimes like there's a bit of a gap between like player number five and player number six in most seasons, where like the top five kind of separate themselves. If you get two of those guys, you're in the mix as long as you can build out the proper roster. Now, ask me if they can build out the proper roster, and I have less confidence. But if you can get Giannis, especially if you can keep Austin, and that's like your three, I really like that. So I'm cool with it. It's not my preference. My preference is build out the depth, build out a starting group in the right pieces around Luka and Austin. But it seems like the Giannis thing is something they're going to pursue. That's what they've been angling their books for. So I'm not like against it, but I do have some skepticism as to their ability to build out the right group.
Yeah, gone are the days where you just have three really good players and the rest of your team doesn't matter that much. You know, as long as you have guys that can be on an NBA court, I think you need real depth in the league. If this were 20 years ago, yeah, absolutely. That, you know, you go with those three. I'd be very concerned with Giannis about whether or not they can actually build out a full competitive roster with the kind of depth that they need. But then again, it's Giannis. And we know if the Lakers have a chance to bring in a star, they're going to take it. They're just going to. It's in their DNA. We did get just a little bit of news. Mark Stein just reported that Luka Doncic is indeed on course to play for a short stint in Sunday's All-Star game after a strong pregame workout on Thursday, his sources tell him. So sounds like Luka will be in action on Sunday. Luka, don't worry about looking too good out there. Take it slow.
That's what I thought was going to happen. I thought it was trending that way.
Yep. So that's where we're at. All right. We got a couple more. Why not overpay and steal Kessler? Not only is he the best big available, but a great fit. 35 to 40 million. That's a lot. Two firsts for Herb or Max would be great. Okay, so my problem with the Kessler thing is, yes, you can try to get him in restricted free agency. You can offer him more than what he should get. You can overpay him. That would inherently then be a negative value contract on your books. But who knows? Maybe he plays his way into that being positive value. You never know. The Jazz widely reported just turned down two first-round picks for him. I just can't see a scenario where
and Toronto.
Yeah, so I just can't see a scenario where the Jazz do that. Like, if there was a number the Jazz would truly break at and they thought it was realistic for Kessler to get that number, wouldn't they just accept the multiple first-round picks and then move it? They're going to have a hard enough time once Kessler gets paid building out their roster with Kessler, Markkanen, and Jaren Jackson Jr., their front court, all making so much money. The exit ramp was right there for them, and they chose not to take it. I have a hard time imagining that the Lakers are going to convince the Jazz to blink on Walker Kessler.
So my thought with this is I think it makes it less likely that they're able to steal him in a sign-in trade and send a pick out, right? Because if I'm Utah at that point, I'm like, I'm not agreeing to the sign-in trade. I'm just going to match whatever offer you're trying to make for him. And if I am going to agree to the sign-in trade, you need to send me the two picks that I turned down at the deadline for it to be worth it on my end. Otherwise, I played myself, right? So yeah. I don't see Utah agreeing to that. I think it would require an overpay. I don't think you have to get up to 40 million. I think 30 million, Utah starts to sweat. I think you get to 32 million, they might blink. And certainly I think 35 million, I would be pretty surprised if they end up matching that. So we can debate whether he's worth that. I think I would go to 30. I would probably even consider 32, 35 might be a little bit too high, but I would easily pay him 30, 32 million. And I would also give up first for him. I would give up two firsts for him. Ideally, in that case, you are getting him at a, like, you're paying him the 30 instead of 35 and two firsts, right? Because there has to be some haggling there of, we're going to get him at a more team friendly number, but offset that with the picks. Ideally, it'd be like 30 and like a first, where you don't give up both firsts and you save a little bit of money. But I don't think Utah's going to go for that. But I think the one thing here with in, I know, you know, people are talking about Herb and whether he's worth two firsts or Max. I assume this is Max Christie.
Yeah.
The thing you have to remember is the Lakers are in a bit of a desperate situation here, as we've talked about. They need to go all in to a degree on this summer, or like should be looking to make aggressive moves this summer. And sometimes you do have to overpay to build the roster. And that's sort of the situation that they put themselves in. So that's not every team's path, but that's kind of the Lakers' path, because the alternative is just doing nothing. And then you are continuing to kick the can down the road. And it's like think about when you're at the airport or when you're at a concert or you're at a sport, you know, sports game, they will jack up the prices on things. And it's like, you want this $2 Dasani water? Well, it's $8 here.
Yep.
And your options are, you either pay the $8 for the Dasani water or you don't pay for it. And then you're just thirsty and you're going to go the next 3 hours being thirsty. So that's kind of the situation the Lakers are in now. It's either you pay up, you either overpay for the restricted free agents, you overpay in the trade market, or you sit it out and cool, now you have another first round exit with Luka Doncic and you're potentially a year closer to him leaving. So those are the two choices. And I think the Lakers are going to have to be in a position probably to overpay for some guys. And that's just going to, that's the reality of the situation.
I think Rob understands very well the concept of dynamic pricing and price gouging. You know, he's very familiar with Disneyland. So, you know, I think he gets that sometimes stuff costs a lot more money if you are in
a certain spot. The Disneyland was a low hanging fruit that I should have thought of.
Let me ask you this. Everything is even. Contracts are the same. The amount you'd have to pay and say a sign and trade, exactly the same. Would you rather have Peyton Watson or Walker Kessler?
With all the present information, I'd rather have Walker Kessler. I leave an opening to change my mind, because I believe in changing your mind when you get new information. I want to see how Peyton Watson looks on the fully formed Nuggets team and how he handles the pressure cooker of the playoffs with being a more prominent piece. I think overall, he's been their fourth best player behind, of course, Jokic, Murray, and Gordon. So can he maintain that as Cam Johnson and Christian Brown and Aaron Gordon are fully healthy, playing their full allotment of minutes, and he's probably in a bench role, but maybe not, but potentially in a bench role. How does he look? How does he handle that? How does he fare in the playoffs? That, to me, will shift that Watson versus Kessler. But based on the current information, I think the center spot is incredibly important with Luka. There are only, like, there are guys who fit with him, but there, I think it's a shorter list of guys who fit offensively and defensively. And I think Kessler's defensive ceiling is like top five defensive center in the league. Yeah. And that to me is a guy that is worth pursuing. So I just think that the fully formed version of Kessler to me is better than the fully formed version of Watson. Now, Watson is exactly the type of two-way guy the Lakers have needed. So you could clearly make that case for him. I think it's close. Like, ideally you get both. I would take either of them, but I would lean Kessler, I think.
Yeah, I look at, when we're talking about which player has the ability to be elite, In anything in particular, you look at Walker Kessler last season relative to bigs, according to Cleaning the Glass, he was in the 95th percentile when it comes to block percentage while being in the 87th percentile in foul. A lot of times you see the guys who have a very high block percentage, they also have a high foul rate because they're picking up fouls, chasing after so many blocks. Kessler's ability to do both, and it doesn't bear out this season. His foul percentage was not great this year, but it was in a 5-game sample size, so I'm not going to worry about that too much. His ability to not only block a high percentage of shots, have a major impact. He's not as good as Wemby around the rim, but there's not a lot of players that are on Walker Kessler's level in terms of
no one's as good as Wemby around the rim.
Nobody's getting to that stage, but he makes a huge impact in a negative way on opponents' field goal percentage at the rim. So he does some things at a very elite level that would be very intriguing. That said, Johan, for having talked about the Lakers needing wings for so long, it's hard to say I prefer a big over a wing. I'd be happy with either player, obviously, but I think you make a good point about feeling more confident that Walker Kessler is locked in as a starter. We know what he is as that. Peyton Watson may not be a starter on his own team once they get healthy. So is this, we have a smaller sample size of Peyton Watson being very, very good, and he's burned very bright, less confident in his overall play. Is this sustainable or not if he gets a bigger role? Kessler, we've seen in a bigger role, and we've seen him be successful.
I also think for me, it's just the defense of, I think Kessler's a better and more impactful defender than Watson, and you really need defense if you're going to be building a core around Luka and Austin. So I just think, like, if we're comparing, if it's like Peyton Watson and DeAndre Ayton as one potential path, or like Walker Kessler and Rui, I would take the Walker Kessler Rui pathway. I just think it's like, I don't know. I just think that the rim protection is like, cause that's been, I think, arguably the biggest thing that it's like, kind of flown under the radar. The Lakers are a horrible rim protection team. Like if you get to the rim against the Lakers, you're scoring or getting fouled pretty consistently or getting an offensive rebound. So part of that is the point of attack and wing defense. So I'm not going to overlook that, but it is a layup line when you get to the rim against LA. And I think they really need a great rim protecting center.
The Lakers ranked 29th in the NBA in opponents' field goal percentage at the rim this season.
And look at the other teams down there are pretty much like lottery teams. I think there's a couple of good teams. Like Denver's pretty low too, but it's not good company.
Let's go here. Last one. Mike said the least likely scenario for LeBron is retiring. He's going to want a farewell tour, and that isn't criticism at all. He deserves that. I don't know. I mean, from what I've heard over the last couple of months has largely been that the idea that LeBron needs a retirement tour has been overstated, and that may not necessarily be a prerequisite for him retiring. Now, it doesn't mean he doesn't want one either, but I think just falling back onto this notion that he will only retire if he gets a retirement tour, I don't know how accurate that actually is. And that was where I think most people were landing when we first started discussing this, 6 or 7 months ago.
Yeah. And I believe Dave McMenamin of ESPN had a recent report about, I think it was during the Grammy road trip, that it was actually going to the Cleveland game, that he's heard from sources close to LeBron that LeBron doesn't necessarily want a retirement tour just because of the potential pressure of, it's the last game in Utah, it's the last game in Minnesota, it's the last game wherever. And if he's physically unable to perform or play in that game, that it's going to be like really disappointing for the fans who have bought the tickets, showed up to the game. And like, it's just a lot of pressure, especially, I mean, we saw it with Kobe's retirement tour, right? Like, it was every game. And I don't remember how many games Kobe ended up missing on the road. I don't think it was many, but like, it still was like this added of, is he going to be available? And just like, what type of game is he going to have? And like, there's all these factors that kind of go into the pressure of that. Now I thought LeBron would want that, and I think he deserves it if he does decide to do that, right, and announce it before the season. But it does seem like I would agree that I still think of the three options, retirement is third, but I think it's bigger than a lot. I think it's a bigger slice of the pie than people think. I don't think it's higher than 5% I think it might even be higher than 10%. You know, maybe it's somewhere in that like 15 to 20%. So that's like higher than I think we thought going into the season.
Yeah. And I don't think there's anything on the court that's saying he has to retire. You're not looking at this and going, oh man, he's on his last legs. There's moments defensively where you go, okay, LeBron missed his rotate, didn't go close out there or whatever. He has moments in games where he can still turn it up, but he's still an incredibly impactful player out there on the court. So there's nothing, it's nothing saying he's done, he's washed, he has to hang him up or anything like that. But yeah, I don't know that he actually needs the full retire. There is, as you mentioned, there is a downside to having the retirement tour, and that is the pressure that's on you to participate in all of those games, even if that may not be the right thing for you. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out this summer. I do think that between retirement and signing with another team, there's now a greater percentage chance that LeBron is not a Laker through some method next season rather than he is a Laker. And I probably wouldn't have been in that spot to start the year. But that said, I don't think retirement is a necessity for him right now. And as long as mentally he wants to keep playing, I think he can still continue to play. If he does decide to retire, it would not shock me at this point if he just said, yep, I'm done, that's it, and decided to forego the retirement. It also wouldn't surprise me if he plays another year and says, this is going to be it, let's do the whole send-off and the whole thing. In other words, Jovan, everything is up in the air right now around LeBron retiring.
It's going to be the summer of Giannis and LeBron. That is what we are we're heading for.
Yep, that's the path we're heading down. All right, everybody, thank you so much for joining today. I know we're kicking off a holiday weekend here. Appreciate all of you. Jovan and Jason are going to be back next week. I'm going to be out of town, so Jovan and Jason are going to be holding things down next week. You guys are going to be doing some player grades, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm excited to get into it and see how few people agree with us.
Did you guys settle on dates? Are we doing Tuesday?
We're doing Tuesday, Thursday next week.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, everybody be on the lookout for that. Appreciate all of you. Please make sure you do subscribe right here to the channel. Follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Till next time, everybody. See ya and stay safe.